Welcome to the Dry Face Podcast number 2, the best podcast for information on issues surrounding sports business in the Caribbean. On the Dry Face, we hear from sports administrators, coaches, athletes, and many other stakeholders in the sporting industry. Together, we'll examine their contribution to various aspects of sports. So, live from Kingston, Jamaica, I'm your host, Dalton Myers. And this week, we'll be looking at sports and marketing. And here to discuss it is Tania Lee, Vice President, Marketing at Sportsmax Limited. Tania, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
All right, Tania, talk to us a little bit about your background in sports marketing. Why did you decide to take this career path?
Where do I start from? Let me just start from scratch. My passion for sports.
Competitive person.
That is true. That is true. But I've always been passionate about sports. It's what excites me. Mm-hmm. I've always had an interest in sports. I never thought of it, though, as a career move. You know, one of the things that I used to look at growing up was really how they did like the NBA, and I'd watch and I'd be so enamored with like the Chicago Bulls. I'd look at everything from them coming out, the starting lineup, ripping off the, you know, the sweats, just how the lights would flicker and all that excitement around it. And I'd say, you know, Americans are so good at TV and this is great. And I wish I could work in something like this, like literally as a teenager, that used to be like my thought process. And then fast forward to, I believe it was 2005, thereabout, and I saw a group of people. I went to a basketball game, and I saw a group of people all outfitted in Sportsmax shirts, and I was like, what is this? And somebody said, it's a sports TV station that they just started a couple of years ago, and I was like, what? And so I contacted them, and I was like, I love sports. I want to work in sports, and, well, here I am today.
In marketing. So just discuss a little bit more. What does sports marketing entails?
Sports marketing is really the promotion of sporting events, sports teams, and the promotion of brands through sports and through sports teams and through sports ambassadors. Mm-hmm. So it's really all encompassing. Anything from managing sponsorships, anything from managing events. You know, I believe the full gamut of it is sports marketing. Okay. And even in my role, it entails so much. So
part of it that you started out by saying that, you know, you've seen the Chicago Bulls, you've seen these professional teams in the U.S. In the Caribbean, it's a little bit different in terms of how our teams operate. How difficult is it to market, do activations for respective professional teams and competitions?
I can tell you that through the year, it started out being quite difficult. Now it's much easier.
Okay.
I think we're at a much better place now when I look at certain associations. So when I just started in the business, like about 10, 11, 12, 13 years ago, and if we have a sporting competition, I very often had to sell to an administration the idea that you are creating an experience. This is not just what you're doing on the pitch. It's not just about running a race. It's not just about, you know, kicking the football. And the idea that you're creating an experience from start to finish. Going back to even the NBA model that I mentioned earlier, when you go to an NBA game, from you get there and they put the T-shirt on your seat with the team name, to the fact that they're taking a timeout now for TV and there's entertainment on the floor, there's the mascot, there's the cheerleader, right through until you leave there, what they put up on the big screen, the kiss cam and everything, it's a complete experience. When you leave there, you feel like, I was at this big sporting event. And you know what? If you're not really that into sports, you're engaged and you want to come back. And that, to me, is what sports marketing is all about. You want to create an experience that goes beyond the sports fan because you're creating new fans for that sport. Mm-hmm. And you have to make it relevant to that audience. So initially, it was a hard sell. But I think over time, people get it, especially now with the social media space. It forces people to see what's relevant because you see what people are directly engaging with, what they're interested in. And so you know now that this is how I have to promote a product, or this is what they want to see, or this is how I get an audience there. So it's easier now.
Is it difficult then, or easier, to work with the respective organizers and sponsors? So say, for example, there's an event coming up, you're one of the sponsors, you're also the broadcaster for it. How difficult is that to get them to understand these aspects of marketing and these aspects of activation?
It varies. And you'll find from different companies, you can very readily tell who the people are that get it. Mm-hmm. So it really varies. I found that for many sponsorships that I've worked on, it's been a great relationship. I want to use an example of a recent one that we got into at Sportsmax, which is the schoolboy football season with Manning Cup and the Costa mm-hmm. Cup and the ISA Champions Cup last year. We had a great group of sponsors. You know, there was Wisinko on board. We had Digicel. There was Sportsmax. We had Kendall. And I don't want to leave out anybody. KFC. And it was just great because everybody understood what we were trying to achieve. We had lots of strategizing that went into the season. And right throughout, the importance for us was just how do we build on this great product mm-hmm. that has such a huge audience. And for us in TV land, we're thinking, how do we make this relevant outside of Jamaica to our wider 27 other Caribbean markets? So, you know, it made it that much easier. And what I find is that marketers now get it that sports has a captivated audience, passionate audience, an audience that you can engage with directly. And it makes it so much easier for you to sell your brand when you go to the matches, you know, when they watch on TV, because they're already captive and engaged.
You're the VP at Sportsmax, VP for marketing. And Sportsmax is widely regarded as the Caribbean's most widely distributed and most watched sport channel. So, for example, you now have the NBA, UEFA Champions League, tennis, La Liga, and many more. Walk me through some of what goes into your mind to ensure that this is a hit with the Caribbean audience. How do you make the determination on what to acquire? So I know there are different persons who are working out all the deals, etc. And then you're there. How do you now ensure that, okay, Caribbean people are going to enjoy this part of it? How am I going to market these different events, especially if it is something that we have not been watching before?
Well, first of all, I want to start from even the first process, which is how you decide what content to take.
Right.
In the sports marketing business for TV, content is king.
Mm-hmm.
So you want the content that's most in demand and most sought after. It makes no sense for you to be buying something that the market is not interested in. And it varies from market to market, by the way. People have, and this is a Caribbean channel, so some of the consideration is, what will be a hit right across the board? And so you look at the top properties in sports. You're looking at the Premier League. You're looking at La Liga, obviously. You're looking at NBA. You're looking at something like the World Cup, for which we've had a couple. You're looking at Olympics, for which we have rights to Tokyo 2020, and we had London 2012. And so all the top sports properties to begin with. From the sports marketing standpoint, your first point is now that you'll have to create a bid because you want the content.
Right.
So you have to pitch to them how you're going to sell it, how you're going to grow the audience for the region. Most persons who sell content, they want to know that you're going to create more fans, especially if it's not a mature product. Some products are mature here. You know, the English Premier League is mature. The NBA is mature. La Liga is mature. Some will take a little more, sell like WTA, tennis, etc. It has an audience, but it is largely a niche product. Rugby, etc. Now, what's important for us in marketing it, I like to look at what is relevant and what do people want. And I also like to, as I mentioned before, I like to create an experience. So even something like the UEFA Champions League, which has a huge audience here, huge built-in audience and interest. One of the things I do is I'm looking for the top fixtures in the UEFA Champions League. And when I get a big mouth-watering clash, I know that I want to directly engage with these persons. I want to have a viewing party event. You know, when I get like a World Cup, and we did this at Sportsmax for 3 World Cups, where we said, we're creating a restaurant, a complete restaurant experience, where we have a new venue, we're going to have something where you can come in for breakfast, lunch, dinner, you're going to watch your match live, and you're engaging with our sponsors, so that they're getting more than just who is on TV or who is on their mobile instrument. You're getting to come to a venue, directly engage, do giveaways, you know, and speak to your audience and gain new customers.
Tanya just mentioned about the Tokyo 2020, mm-hmm. and I know that Sportsmax has permission to broadcast over 700 hours of Olympic-related content under the Olympic Channel brand on Sportsmax Network, or mm-hmm. well, all the different platforms. In doing this deal, take us through the steps as a marketer that you would make to ensure that you not only protect the IOC brand, but also your brand, and then ensure that the audience still get that rich feeling of almost being at the Olympics?
I think one of the things that the audience probably doesn't know to start with, and that's a good question, is that there are lots of stipulations and guidelines around what you can and cannot do when it comes to huge sporting properties, specifically something like the Olympics
and FIFA World Cup.
So the first thing a marketer has to look at is just look at what the guidelines are and look at where the restrictions lie and ensure that you comply, because you don't want to be sitting on set and you have some brand in there and they said, excuse me, that's not allowed. And so, you know, having done it for quite some time now, I'm very familiar with it, especially because Sportsmax also sub-licensed this content to a lot of free-to-air channels right across the Caribbean. And I would have had to look over a lot of their promotional items, their branding collateral, their plans, just to make sure that they're compliant. So there's a lot of that goes into it from the jump.
So you have to ensure, one, that your, I guess, advertising manual, whatever that is that they send you, that you're ensuring that everything is protected from the IOC, but you also have to ensure that your brand is protected, meaning that whether it's free to air or whoever is not infringing on any copyright.
And you also want to protect your property rights. Because here's the truth, everybody wants to capitalize during the World Cup and during the Olympics. So what you find is that people tell you that they are brand ambassadors that they want to use to sell a TV set during that time, but they're not really partners of the IOC or of Sportsmax or of any of the brands like the Olympic Association. And so it's quite important that you protect that ahead of time, because ambush marketing is real. And we've seen so many instances of it. I think maybe the most famous one, if I should even bring it up, was an extraordinary moment that we saw at Champs a few years ago.
Yeah.
That, you know, some will say brilliantly executed, some will say what a shame. But at the end of the day, what you'll find is that lots of brands attempt to capitalize on that. And so it's important that you create restrictions, because this content is quite costly. It's expensive. And at the end of the day, you want to protect it.
It's part of it you just mentioned about our extraordinary moment, but isn't that part of what ambush marketing does? It keeps it fresh in our minds forever. So you have to find a way to protect against that or mitigate against things like those happening.
Yes, so which is why too, I mean, when you have those rights, you want to make sure that information goes to the public to say to them, you know, here are the rights that we've retained, and we are vigilant, because that's quite important that you stated it publicly and that people are aware. The idea that somebody can say I'm negligent doesn't hold up in court.
Right.
And certainly talking about millions and millions of dollars, these are significant investments. If anybody even looks at what kind of monies are put into sports rights and purchasing sports rights, they'll realize the importance of having to protect that, especially in a small market like the Caribbean market, which globally, it is a small market. It is not as big as an Indian market or Australia or, you know, North America, or where obviously you're looking at millions and billions of people in a population. So it's quite important that you extract as much value as possible out of that sponsorship and to protect it.
Then it becomes very difficult then for you, is it really difficult to ensure that in a small market like the Caribbean, you can still get return on that kind of an investment, meaning that when you invest in broadcast rights, ensuring that you can get, you know, sponsors, etc., to advertise, and also free-to-air to buy it. Doesn't it then put pressure on you, the sales team, and everybody else?
No, not for us. I must be honest. It's easy, because the truth is that we only go after the most sought-after content. If it's not really sought-after and there isn't a huge demand, we don't really waste time on it. That's just the truth. I don't know if that sounds cocky. So, for example, something that the Olympics sells itself. Everybody wants
That's
it.
Correct.
It's a highly sought property. Obviously, there's a lot to be gained from it from a TV perspective and advertising. No, it's even more important because a lot of people are watching now on their mobile instruments and on their broadband devices. So you can watch from anywhere, anytime. You could be on the beach and you're tuning in. So the digital rights are important. Those TV broadcast rights are important. Radio rights are critical. And it sells itself. There's usually a fight for this kind of content.
Okay, so here's what, again, as you mentioned that there are different types of rights.
Yes,
meaning
there are.
That you can be buying for cable versus buying for
free-to-air, which is just to give
mobile,
an example, a TV6 in Trinidad is a free-to-air, a CVM and a TVJ in Jamaica, because it's not pay TV.
Right. But then couldn't it become challenging where persons, say for example, you buy the cable rights, mm-hmm. for lack of a better term, and someone else then buys the right for mobile platform. Mm-hmm. Couldn't that be an issue or not necessarily?
Not really. All you do is that you ensure that you are not infringing on anybody's rights. So, for example, even us as a company, we ensure it's very important to us who are in the rights buying business and the rights selling and sub-licensing that we do not infringe on the rights of others. Firstly, this is very important to our company and to protect the rights that we have. So it's not difficult. Once we have something and we know that this is where our rights lie, we ensure that we are compliant in whatever we do. And I think that by and large across the board, you do have a lot of compliance from most media houses throughout the region where they know that, okay, my share of space is in the cable space in the region. I may have to black out a particular country or I may have to black out whatever I show in the digital space. Normally, people do take the steps to ensure that that is done because you do want the rights. And, you know, you respect that today, you may have this limitation, but tomorrow you may be the one that would like somebody to not infringe on your rights.
Take us through a project that you probably would have done that you thought would be really challenging, but you appreciate it at the end. Any marketing project lately that you would have been involved in? What are some of the things you have to do immediately, quickly to ensure that this is a hit and then execute?
Wow. Boy, so much I can think of. Let me just go back to last year. Got the World Cup rights, the FIFA World Cup rights, about 40 days before the FIFA World Cup started. That's unheard of. Normally, when you're planning for a World Cup, you're planning
40 months.
Maybe like about 24 months in advance.
That's
great. Pretty much. And so, because we've done it before, though, and we have a very experienced team, luckily, and this is something that excites us. Honestly, this is what we do, and we're passionate about it. So, we were excited, we jumped on it, and we're able to have, you know, we created an app specifically for the experience, and we had thousands and thousands of persons across the region watching on it. A lot of people thought that it was quite a sophisticated setup. For those who tune in, they said, wow, this looks great. You guys are shooting from Kia's showroom in New Kingston. You know, it looked first rate. We want to make sure that we have the best analytical team because it makes no sense to do sports and you don't have the right analytical team. You want to have good commentary and good analysis. And we provided that. And so I think that was a very rewarding experience over a very short period of time. Same thing with the schoolboy football season. And I still go back to, there's actually a Caribbean streaming record that we had set in 2011.
Talk to us about that. That's a record.
That's a record because what we did was it was champs.
Okay.
And we actually showed it on digital, online. And back in 2011, it wasn't so popular. Everybody wasn't really watching on their mobile instruments, etc. But you know how important Champs is to Jamaicans right across the board. So we had it available globally on live stream, 127 countries. You had like 55,000 people tuning in at 8 p.m. on Saturday night, looking at it from as far as Qatar, Iraq. You know, it was just mind-blowing. And, you know, it just said, Jamaicans are everywhere, and we love champs. So that was just absolutely amazing to me to see.
Okay, I think that is good. You have been involved in this, and you've mentioned several projects. Explain if you wish, how difficult is it or is it really difficult to be a woman in a man's space, meaning that sports is considered as a male-dominated space. There are not a lot of women who are involved in either the mainstream sport of it, whether it's the leadership or marketing. There's
Sophia Harris-Lowe from JFF.
There's Carole Beckford, who has been with West Indies cricket.
I have Chantel Hill that manages the Jamaica Tullowash, remember?
Right.
Wait, Tanya, don't forget me.
I know we have Heather Bernard at the Jamaica Olympic Association, so emerging. But how difficult has it been and has it changed, do you think? And some of the work that you have to put in just to ensure that people recognize that you're very important in the whole scheme of things.
I wouldn't say it's been difficult, to be honest. And I don't know where that came from, because a lot of times people ask me, they say, how do you work in such a predominantly male space? But it doesn't always feel like that. We do have our challenges as women. Sometimes people just think you're either just a pretty face or they wonder where you get the work or why you're in sports or you don't know anything. It's funny how, you know, women are judged and we have critical eye put on what we do. And I think what I just do is what I do in everything in my life, because as you mentioned earlier, I'm super competitive. I just work harder. I try to do better. I try to prepare ahead. And I take very seriously the idea that I represent women. I do. I don't know if this is because of my background where I pursued a master's in gender and development, and I am aware of how the world is and how they perceive women, and that we have a long way to go in terms of creating that gender equality, you know. But I see it as quite critical for me to represent the idea that women do have a place in sports, that we should be treated fairly, taken seriously. And sometimes I have to command that respect. I have to. And sometimes I have to remind people of my role, what I do. And it may sound crazy, but people don't hand it to you. You have to earn it. And you have to, you know. So for me, that's something that I've always done. And I use my voice, I believe. I take quite seriously using my voice to advance sports generally. And lastly, and most importantly, I try to, as much as possible, include women in much of what I do. So even in my sports column that I write for the paper, I try to shed light on women's issues and affairs related to women and women's sports, because the truth is that we are behind the eight ball.
Recent market trends, including the rise of social media, increased online viewing habits, etc., show that new media, digital marketing, is quickly becoming the first thing people go to for content. Do you agree with this? And how do you respond to this emerging trend that is being suggested, that is out there, to stay relevant in the cable sports media landscape?
I think that they go hand in hand, and I don't know that any one will survive without the other, because the truth is that you still have huge viewership numbers for TV. There obviously is a shift, especially for a younger demographic who now go to digital spaces for their content. And so what you find, though, is that the traditional television viewers and sports fans, and most sports fans, go to TV specifically for the big screen experience. Sports is not something that you watch on the small screen or on a second screen. You want to experience it, which is why, too, TVs go off the shelf for all furniture companies once you have a big sporting event coming up, because you know how men are. Women buy shoes, men buy big TVs. Sports viewership is done on a big screen. You want to feel like you're there. You want to experience the atmosphere almost like you're sitting in the stands and you're right in the action. And so TV, when it comes to sports, will never go away. In fact, sports is what really keeps cable alive, and sports is what keeps TV alive, because that's the biggest thing outside of a movie buff who needs a surround sound and all that excitement. But what you find in the social space is that it is quite relevant for the promotion of that content, and you want to give people short form content in that space. It's quite relevant, it's something that they can buy into, and you want to make this kind of like a story. So what I find for marketing, and you know, I think it's quite useful for even other television stations, I'm looking at how people market sports generally, find the story, create that drama, give me exactly what I'm looking at. What is the competition here? What am I supposed to be watching today? Where's the drama? And I want that in short form. I want it in my social media space. And I probably need it a day before this event comes on. So I say, oh, I'm tuning in because what? Some girls from Ferry running well, and Heidel should probably challenge Edwin Allen this year for the title. I need to see these ladies from Ferry. There is a young lady that's 14-year-old. What? There are twins in, you know, that are running well and likely to break the 100-meter at champs. 14 years old, the fastest in the world. That's crazy. And so if you create those stories, when you talk about a Wayne Pinnock and you hear his story, a young man that's at Kingston College, no schoolboy ever jumping 8 meters before. He lost his mom at age 11. You know, his father, who works at KC, comes to train and watches him every day. He's also a hurdler. And you know, when you look at that story, it was such a compelling story. When I watched what we did with on Wayne Pinnock for Grand Prix, I thought this is an athlete that everybody needs to watch at champs.
Wayne Pinnock from Kingston College in Jamaica.
In Jamaica. Right. And then what eventually happens is that Wayne Pinnock breaks a long jump record, jumping further than any high schooler has ever
8.05 meters.
Amazing stuff. And then he goes on to break the 110-meter hurdles record.
13.05 seconds, I think, so it is, or 13.06.
No, we have one to watch for the future. And those are the stories. There are so many stories out there for our young people that need to be told. And that kind of content, I think, is relevant in the social space where people want these emotional stories. And they want a reason to tune in, even if they're not a sports fan.
Yeah, there are some others that were done on Kai Chang and the young lady from Excelsior.
Akira Nugent. Yes, really. And when you listen to Akira and the way she speaks, I mean, I'm always blown away by young people who she has it together. That's how I'll put it. And it's amazing. And it's great because she's a model of what you want from a student athlete, somebody who represents themselves well, who does well at school and who comes to champs and they're breaking records. It's just, it's beautiful.
So those stories are part of what you use to sell the product.
Absolutely. For us, I would need to tell the viewer why they need to watch. I will never assume that my audience is interested in anything. And I'm not only interested in the purists. Yes, there is a man somewhere with a watch and somebody who sits at, Sabina Park with a transistor radio listening to the commentary. But I get it. I already have you. How do I reach that young lady who sits somewhere and, you know, she's not necessarily interested. How do I need to find a story that will captivate her so that she will tune in and cry? You know, sports is fun when you feel the passion and when you want something and you're cheering for that person and you know that they overcame an odd and this is a story and it inspires you. And I think without doing that, without showing them that story ahead, you really haven't done your job. And I go back to the NBA model because I think it's so perfect. I remember when I used to watch the NBA and they'll tell you, you know, they'll say today, Shaquille O'Neal is in his fifth final and last week he had a bad experience and this happened and that. And then they say, and on the other side, here comes. And by the time they're done, they say, coming up next, it's the Lakers, it's the Mavericks. You're already so amped up and excited now to see how will this drama unfold.
But a lot of that, though, has to do with having data. Data on athletes, data on events, etc. And I find, or do you think, that we struggle with that with a lot of, certainly in the Caribbean or sporting association, not having that data that you need? So for example, Red Stripe Premier League, yes, we know how many goals have been scored and who scored them, but minutes played, the amount of, well, red and yellow cards are pretty easy, but just some of those other information that the commentator could get or the color commentator could get so that the audience can feel a part of it. Do you think that that's one of the challenges faced certainly in the Caribbean?
I think so. I think that we have a history of not really recording what we should. And so you find that sometimes information is quite difficult to get. But you know what the beauty of our region is? For a lot of our sporting events, there are persons that are intimately involved throughout the years who have a wealth of information that can help. I, for one, for example, even when I'm writing my sports column, I don't sit with all this information. I lean on people. I think Hubert Lawrence will be blocking me very soon because I will often message Hubert and I say, Hubie, talk to me. What's going on the girl's side? Who should I look out for? You know, I lean on a Ricardo Chambers in office. Sometimes I'll talk to Lance Whitaker. I'm talking to Leighton Levy. You know, I'll call up Dalton Myers and I'll ask a few questions. But there is a repository of knowledge, a Bruce James, so many people, and they are quite helpful. And I believe that research just needs to be done. If you're going on air, if you're going on TV, if you're speaking to people from, you know, newspapers, anything that you do, the research is important. Having a network of people that know what they're doing and that understand and can help are important. And I don't think there is any excuse for anyone to not be able to provide this information to the public. Because the truth is, most of the people sitting, and this is where, you know, you can tell what's good TV and what's not good. Most of the audience sitting at home don't have this information. And so you have to know that you're providing it. Sometimes I'm blown away by American statistics. You know, they're like, this is a fourth, you know, touchdown in 3 weeks from. So it's like, how did they come up with that?
They live by stats. Yeah?
They're a stats society. And if anybody has followed my articles in the Gleaner, they'll know that I like to do rankings. Everything is a ranking. Like, here's my top five and here's a top 10. Because I live in that school of thought and I like it. I want this information. I want to be able to go to work at the cooler and say, did you know that yesterday, you know, that was a third touchdown in 2 weeks? And I feel like, yeah.
So you have been involved with many aspects of sport, not just marketing, but sporting industry in Jamaica and certainly the Caribbean is broadening. It's widening. It's getting a little bit more structured. There's a youngster out there who may be considering sports marketing. What would be some advice that you'd be giving to that young Tanya Lee or that young female, that young male who wants to get into sports marketing and probably say, hey, well, that sounds easy. I can do that. What would be some of your, what would be your advice to those persons?
It's probably the same advice I'd give to anybody going into any field. Make sure that this is something that you really want to do and for the right reasons. For me personally, honestly, it doesn't even feel like work. It hardly ever does. And that's, I know it sounds cliche, but it's true, because I'm doing what I really love and I enjoy, and I wouldn't want to do anything else. I like sports, and that's why too I do a proliferation of things in sports outside of just my vice presidential duties in marketing, the column. I've written books. I have a coloring book. I manage athletes. I'm a publicist, because I live, I breathe, I sleep it. I like it. So I would say make sure that you're passionate about sports. And then, of course, I think everyone should study their craft and hone their skills. So you want to look at having education in sports marketing. There are lots of opportunities there. There is no, is it a unit at the university? So, you know, there are opportunities to study here and overseas. And I also think I would say to them, look at the broader global space. Because, you know, we're in the age of globalization. There's no reason for you to. When I just started, I was limited by the idea that I'm going to get a 9-to-5 somewhere else because nobody's really doing sports the way I like it in the region. Yeah. And if a Sportsmax wasn't founded in 2002, I probably wouldn't be working in sports. But maybe that was a myopic way of thinking, because there's an entire world out there and you can work anywhere, you know. And so I would say, look, think global. Hone your skills and make sure that you're passionate about sports.
All right, Tania, thank you very much for being here. A lot of information there, and I hope that our listeners will learn something. I'm sure they learn a lot from you. So thanks for joining us this week on The Drive Phase. Remember, we'd appreciate a rating on iTunes. Tell a friend about the show so they too can spread the word. Remember, feel free to send comments or questions to thedrivephase@gmail.com. Also, you can feel free to follow us on Twitter @thedrivephaseja and Facebook @thedrivephase. You can also use the hashtag TDP for updates on all things on The Drive Phase. Until next time, see you then.